My name is Tom Hooper. I'm a London qualified Blue Badge guide. I've guided for London Walks for many, many, many years. And here's an excerpt from my Notting Hill walk. The walk starts at Holland Park Underground Station on Holland Park Avenue. And it finishes at one of the most famous sites in Notting Hill, which is Portobello Road Market. In modern terms, this is an area which is made famous by that 1999 film Notting Hill, and we will be addressing that film later in the walk. But as we stand in Holland Park Avenue and look up the hill, that's the way up to the modern day Notting Hill Gate. And that brings us to the first thing, which is the name itself, Notting Hill. And the name Notting Hill and Holland Park Avenue itself are perhaps the oldest references on the walk. Notting Hill Gate, well, the hill is pretty obvious. It's the hill leading up to Notting Hill Gate. And gate is obvious as well because there was once a toll gate on this road so that people had to pay to use the road. That leaves Notting. And what's in her name, Notting? Well, confusion, really. Down through the many centuries, there have been lots of variations of this name. In the medieval world, it was known at the end of the 1300s as Notting Hull with a K, Knot. And in Henry VIII's time, the 16th century, that had become Notting Barnes. And by the end of the 19th century, it even became Nutting Barnes. But of course, it is this Knot bit which has grasped people's imaginations. And extraordinarily, it was thought for quite some time that Knot sounds like Canute, so therefore it has something to do with King Canute. It seemed people ignored the fact that in the word or phrase Notting, there is ing, which is the Saxon for a group of settlement of people. And I think we can therefore pretty well assume that if we look up the hill, somewhere up there, Knotter, a person lived, Knotter, with his people. And that, of course, gives lie to the fact that if you look up the hill, this modern Holland Park Avenue was in fact an ancient tract which was probably even there before Knotter. If you go 2.5 miles up the hill and on, you'll get to Marble Arch and that strange place, London, which the Romans called Londinium. So I guess you can imagine that nearly 2,000 years ago, this track might have been used by Romans to go down the hill and then off westwards to the very edge of the Roman Empire at Bath, or what they called Aquae Sulis. As we stand looking across Holland Park Avenue, you're very aware that there are massive houses opposite, and this is the area of Holland Park. Prices for houses there are seriously expensive, the buildings are seriously large, so we're not going to go near it. What we're going to do is we're going to largely take a trip through 19th and 20th century Notting Hill. So we're going to go down the hill past the row of shops. And even the row of shops pretty well indicate how this area has changed in modern times. Through much of the 20th century, Notting Hill was not a rich area. It was an area of multi-occupancy. And indeed, throughout the 19th century, part of it were slums. What you see today is a reflection of how the area has changed, and indeed some people say from the shops you can tell who lives in an area. Well, we're going to walk past obviously one or two multinational shops and cafes. There is, for instance, a branch of that well-known Saint of Coffee, Saint Arbuck of Seattle. There is a branch of Paul. But there is also an independent bookshop called Daunt. This is one of 10 they have, and good it is as well. But for me, the star, without a shadow of doubt, is a butcher's. And this butcher's is regularly voted one of the top butchers in the UK. It's Lydgate's. And this is a 5-generation business where David Lydgate is the current butcher. So this is a butcher's that's, I guess, about 150 years old. As you look in the butcher's itself, there is this traditional butcher's display, which is pretty unusual in London. And you immediately realise that, in fact, this is a special place. It is special partly because they sell organic produce. And they, in fact, sell produce from Prince Charles's estate, way to the west of London. And apparently they gave sausages to the Queen's mother, the Queen Mother, for her 100th birthday. Perhaps she was never quite the same afterwards. But actually, for many people, it's the pies that they go for. Legates is famous for its pies and the quality of the pies, whether it's one just for you or you want to entertain with 16 people, and whether you want game pie, beef, chicken, vegetarian, there's a pie for you. And they're often on display in the windows, and you can buy them online as well. In fact, there are blogs about these pies, and one person wrote on a blog that he had, in fact, tried every single type of Lydgate's pies, and he'd loved them all. He said he could eat them every single day of his life, but he would die happy and fat. And then he made the comment that he never felt like that about a butcher's before, and that he must be in love with the butchers. So there's a thing. We're going to continue down and we're going to the hill, and we're going to turn to the right, and we're going to into our first residential road, which is Princedale Road, which in the 19th century, when it was built, was called Prince Road. And in fact, you can pretty well tell as soon as you look down the road that you're looking at a almost continuous row of 19th century terrace houses. Nothing extravagant, and indeed, the original occupants would be absolutely astonished, I suspect, to realise the price that these houses sell for now. And in Princedale Road, you probably get a house perhaps for £2.5 to £3 million, and perhaps a flat for £1.5 million ish upwards. Flats pretty important these days, because this has been an area where people have bought the property to rent. If you think you're going to pick up a bargain, you're not going to get a bargain, I suspect, these days. There are hardly any houses left that are run down. But when I started the walk, there were several houses that were run down, and they gave a reflection of how this area would have been decades ago. Not the neat houses that you see these days, but a different world where rooms were rented out, where there was and still is a cosmopolitan society. And that definitely is still much the case. One thing which has changed a bit is that perhaps the bohemian lifestyle that this area was said to have has retreated a bit. Well, you're talking partly of the swinging 60s, I guess, and a number of the residents on Notting Hill in those days have begun to become completely unknown, but some of them have become very famous, including top musicians like Mick Jagger. A bohemian lifestyle for some people means that there is a pointer to another aspect of life in Notting Hill, and it's also recognised by the fact that a charity was founded in this street called Release, 1967. And Release still does, without judgment, provide advice on drug use and drug laws. And indeed, this area certainly provided business for Release. Having said that, the buildings you look at today, these terrace houses, are almost all painted white, beautiful white brick, with one major exception, which is a almost charcoal grey black building with a fantastic roof garden. But white is the order of the day in this street, although in the side streets, traditionally, there are much more pastel colours. Pretty well all the houses are well tended. Window boxes are well tended, even the windows are well tended, and the doors are often quite striking, one distinct from another as you walk down the street. Now, although this is distinctly a terrace, there is one big change in this road. In Princedale Road at number 14, there was a pub. It was there from 1844 until around 2011, which is a pretty big time that it was the local pub here. But now it is a residential development. If you want to see how the pub looked, you get a glimpse of it if you look at Rod Stewart's album Smiler. He had photographs taken of a group just outside the pub, and then on the album he listed every single one of the people. He named them all. So he gave that information about who each person was. But when it came to naming himself, instead of putting Rod Stewart, he said that this was the person responsible for this useless information. So this useless information, he thought about the people there. He could have been a guide giving useless information like me, I guess. But, you know, this pub also features in film. Pretty well everybody knows that Notting Hill is famous for film, if only because of the film Notting Hill. But, you know, Notting Hill has been used so many times in films, from bed knobs and broomsticks way back into the dim, distant past, all the way through to in 1915, when Spectre was released, and even James Bond had a flat in Notting Hill. But for Princedale Road, it's famous as a film set for a different film, and it's a film called It Happened Here. This was released in 1964. It's directed by Kevin Brownlow. It's said to, I think, have taken about 8 years to make, and pretty well all the actors were volunteers. In Princedale Road, this was a film set for a riot scene. The film is said to be one of the most important of a particular genre of filmmaking after World War II, where the result of World War II, the end of World War II, was changed, and Nazi Germany overran the country. There is often a name for It Happened Here as the story of Hitler's England. And in this riot scene in Princedale Road, the director, Kevin Brownlow, decided it was a really good idea to have a coach where the actors would be dressed in neo-Nazi uniform and they'd carry on down the street. What they didn't know was that at the end of the street there was the headquarters of a real neo-Nazi organisation, which was run by Colin Jordan, the National Socialist Movement, as it was called. So, as the coach went down the street, there was apparently a fight scene involving the pub, and as they got closer to Colin Jordan's headquarters, there were two members of his organisation outside, and as they saw the coach with all these neo-Nazis apparently coming towards them, they thought, my goodness, they've seen an apparition. So they thought, well, we better find out what's going on, and they got onto a motorcycle and tried to chase the coach. For reasons that are beyond me, the coach managed to escape. But of course, the other side of this is it's said that the residents of the street in these days didn't know that the filmmakers were filmmakers. They also somehow thought that these neo-Nazis were real and that were reinforcements for Colin Jordan, who was clearly about to take over London. So they rang and jammed the police switchboards at the time. It's something of an irony, I always thought, because, of course, that's the story of the film, that neo-Nazis, well, Nazis, took over London. We're going to go all the way down, in fact, to Colin Jordan's headquarters, as it was, which was at number 74 Princedale Road, and look across to it. As you look across to it, smart terrace house, but distinctive because next door and on both sides, and at number 74, there's a very large window at the street level. And this tells you that there was once a row of shops here, and that was the case when Colin Jordan moved into what was then called Arnold Leese House. Arnold Leese was the head of the Imperial Fascist League. And when he died, his wife Mary invited Colin to use the house. So the National Socialist Movement, which was a splinter group from the British National Party, was founded there in 1962. And the date that it was founded is really important for Colin Jordan because it was the 20th of April, which was Hitler's birthday. Hitler was hugely admired by Colin Jordan, and Colin Jordan would openly use symbols of the Third Reich. And indeed, he would maintain that Jesus was a false messiah and that Hitler was the real messiah. So, of course, from the window, he could peddle his particular vitriol. And indeed, he had slogans. Of course, they were all, as you can imagine, racist. And the slogans that he could peddle were "Keep Britain White," "Stop the Coloured Invasion," and magazines, newspapers were published to promote this agenda. They then slightly diversified and decided to be anti-Semitic as well. And indeed, the policy they advocated was that all Jews be forcibly removed and sent to Israel. And if Israel became overcrowded, that they should be, the rest of them, sent to the island of Madagascar. And crazy as that may seem, it was part of original Nazi policy. So you get a sense of the man and the organisation. And indeed, this organisation managed to have a rally in the same year, 1962, in Trafalgar Square. And believe it or not, 8,000 people turned up to the rally. However, only 800 turned up to support him, and 4,200, roughly, turned up as opponents. And of course, Colin Jordan was furious by this, and he described these people as either being Jews or communists. One of the first times he was arrested. But, you know, it didn't stop him, and in 1965, at a by-election for Parliament, he had a number of slogans, again anti-racist, and he stood on stage during one of the meetings and berated the audience. Dennis Healey, the famous Labour politician, was present. He was at that time Minister of State for Defence. I remember him as having a very distinctive voice and the most enormous eyebrows. But Dennis Healey had had enough, and he punched Colin Jordan, and it's said that Colin Jordan fell off the stage onto some journalists. Well, Colin Jordan, without doubt one of the leading figures in post-war neo-Nazism, stepped down in 1974, although reputedly remained active in a number of organisations. But he didn't entirely step away from publicity, because he was arrested. It's said in the middle England town, the nice middle England town of Leamington Spa, when he exited a shop with three pairs of women's red knickers that he hadn't paid for. When he was stopped, he apparently said that it was all a Jewish plot, but on reflection he decided that in fact he had needed them for his over 80-year-old mother, who had wanted three pairs of red knickers. Well, that was Colin Jordan, who died in 2009. Well, as I say, Colin Jordan was one of the most influential figures in post-war neo-Nazism, and to think that he had his headquarters here in those early days. But we're not going to move quite from this area, because if we turn and face Penzance Street, where it meets Princedale Road, there on the corner is quite clearly a bar that's closed down. That was a local bar called the Academy. But up above are flats. It is said that if you have a murder in a walk, it makes the walk more popular. So there is a murder that I can tell you about, and it happened in the flat here in Penzance Street. This was the last address of Ozzie Clark, and he was murdered there in 1996. He was 54 years old at the time, and he was murdered by his ex-lover, who was just 28 years old, and he was stabbed to death. Ozzie Clark, by that time, his career had receded, but at the height of his career, which was, I would say, between the mid-1960s and 1970s, he was one of the most formidable fashion designers of this country, and he was known as the King of King's Road. At his degree show at the Royal College of Arts in 1965, he made a name for himself immediately. He designed a dress where the model walked down the catwalk, and on the dress were light bulbs down the dress, and as she walked down the catwalk, they flashed on and off. Something of a first, and the press and fashion designers couldn't get enough of it. And I might add that it wasn't the only first either, because in a fashion show not very long after, I think around 1967, Ozzie Clark was the first to use black models at a fashion show. I think, without doubt, his muse was Celia Birtwell, who he'd met previously in Manchester. She moved down to London. She married Ozzie Clark. They had two sons. Marriage didn't last. And another person he also met in Manchester was the painter David Hockney. And they become good friends. And indeed, they went on a fact-finding mission to New York and probably found out a few facts about themselves. The legacy for Ozzie Clark is quite strong. There is legacy in painting by David Hockney. very famous portrait of Mr. and Mrs. Clark and Percy hangs, or is owned by Tate Britain. Almost a traditional portrait of the couple, but Percy is their white cat, which some people would say almost dominates the picture, is the focus for some people. It turns out that, by the way, Percy was not the name of the Clark's cat. The Clark's cat was apparently called Blanche, but David Hockney didn't like the name Blanche, so it became Percy. And of course, in so doing, the sex of the cat was changed. That's one legacy. If you want to see one of the dresses, then you could look at the album cover of Genesis album Foxtrot. Peter Gabriel borrowed a dress from Ozzie Clark, a red dress, which was modelled by his wife Jill wearing a fox's head. So that's there on the cover. But actually, this King of Kings Road, his legacy, was also shown to be important in 2003 when there was a retrospective exhibition about his work at the Victoria and Albert Museum. He's been compared with people like Yves Saint Laurent, Bieber, and Tom Ford. And in the modern world, he is sometimes best known perhaps because he also provided costumes for people like Mick Jagger. And Mick Jagger, of course, remember, was a local resident. Costumes for the Beatles. Beatles film Hard Day's Night, partly used Notting Hill, by the way. And also for that girl on the motorbike, Marion Faithfull, and is also said to have worked with Twiggy. He is synonymous also with the fashion house Radley, but this is where, in 1996, he died. We're going to move from here, and we're going to walk to the end of Princedale Road, where you can quite clearly see some trees growing above the houses. And I would strongly advise everybody, as they walk towards the trees, to take a few deep breaths, because you're about to enter what was considered for pretty well the whole of the 19th century to be one of the worst slum areas in England, if not in Europe. In the year 1850, the author Charles Dickens started to publish a magazine called Household Words, and in one of the first editions there was an article about Notting Hill, which means, of course, there was development here by then, particularly on the hillside, where there were described to be beautiful mansions. But the author said that the area was completely blighted by the area we're going to, which he described as one of the worst areas he'd ever visited anywhere in the world, including in Ireland, he said. Remember, these were the days of the potato famine. The area is called the Piggeries and Potteries, and we're going to pick up the story of Piggeries and Potteries on the next part of the Notting Hill Walk. Thank you for listening, and that's it from me for the moment.